Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome again to Whiskey Congress. We're in between the holidays. So, Stephen, how was your Christmas?
It was good, man. How about yours?
Real good. Went to Buffalo. Thanks for helping me out. Steve was my eyes in the sky. I was in that snowstorm that hit Erie, PA, and dropped about 5 feet of snow on him. So I was right in the middle of that and turned south on I-79. And 10 minutes down the road, I was dry roads and got to explore the countryside of Western Pennsylvania and Eastern Ohio. It was actually kind of cool. I saw a bald eagle while I was there. It kind of flew like right by my truck. It was neat.
Oh, wow. It's America for you.
America, fuck yeah.
Right.
Before we get into anything else, we do have another whiskey to talk about.
Yes, we do. So this is Hibiki. This is a Japanese offering from Suntory Whiskey. I'm just a big fan of, I love whiskey in general, and people typically think of scotch and bourbon. A lot of people lump Jack Daniel's in with bourbon, although it's not. It's Tennessee, and to be bourbon, it's got to be in Kentucky or made in Kentucky. And so this Japanese whiskey is more of a Scotch-style whiskey. We can't call it Scotch, though, because it wasn't made in Scotland.
Right.
It was distilled in Japan and imported here to the U.S. Jumping right into it in terms of a ranking, I'm gonna go ahead and give it, and I'm gonna go with the 89. And okay,
I also said 89. Which I kind of for the exact same reason I said it for the bourbon we did last time. It's very clean. Clean is the only word I can think of to describe it. It's very has good flavor. It's very crisp. It doesn't have a ton of flavor complexity. And I think that's one of the things that happens a lot with Japanese whiskey. I used to work with a guy who worked for Four Roses, and he said that he got brought out for a project in Japan, and everything they did was in such perfect equipment. The state, everything was perfectly stainless steel. And he said, you go back to our things in Kentucky, and you've got these, older, wooden barrels and all that. I mean, they do their stuff in wooden barrels too, I'm sure.
Yes.
But I scored an 89 too.
Yeah, and so some of the interesting down. Things. So this particular whiskey, they don't use American oak. They actually use a similar comparative Japanese wood. I think it actually is called a Japanese oak, but it's different. I mean, there's so many reasons why it's different. It's grown in a different climate, different atmosphere. Different soil, water, all those sort of things are going to influence, the
flavor,
taste that's pulled from the wood. Some of the notes that you get, they are subtle. It's not complex. It's a sweetness, some of a honey. I pick up a little bit of an apple, which and maybe it's more it could be more orange peel than
apple. I'd say more citrusy.
But there's definitely some fruit in there. And some other things that I'm not as much familiar with that I think if you are more familiar with some of the Japanese like flavorings and things like that, you might be able to pick up and find more distinct. But again, like you said, it's very clean. It's very smooth. Some things you taste them, some whiskeys, you taste some of the different flavorings very distinctly. You taste the wood, you taste the fruit, you taste the vanilla or cinnamon or whatever it might be. The notes stand out in different areas of the tongue, where this, they kind of merge together a little bit, and you just get subtle hints as it kind of grows over your tongue. And there's no burn, and this is coming in at like 43% alcohol, so it's about 86 proof, a little bit stronger than your standard, but doesn't have some of the punch of like a Ardbeg, Corey Freckin or something like that. That's gonna, be in the 110s in terms of proof. It's again a solid quality whiskey. In your store, it's gonna run you about $60. You know, something different to have on your shelf. You know, just to kind of distinguish your flavor and your style and your collection.
In that regard, the presentation is fantastic.
Yeah, the presentation is fantastic. By the time this goes up, I will have posted it, as I do all of our rankings. I don't necessarily post the rankings, but I do post the bottle of what we're drinking. You can go to our Instagram page for that and check it out. You can see the whiskey and the beer. And once again, it's Founders. I have a Dirty Bastard. You have
Mosaic Promise.
So I think we just swapped.
Yeah, we did.
You know, for right now, and you know, most Founders, they continue to provide us with tasty quality beer. So, you know, we're not going to turn it down.
In fact, it's very much appreciated.
Right,
if you
very
give us
much
more,
so.
We'll take it.
So definitely a kind of an unofficial sponsor, but we will absolutely take it and promote it. So go out there, buy some Founders, and get us more free beer.
Exactly.
Appreciate it. So with that being said, you know, for our alcohol, we pay a sin tax.
Correct.
And with that idea of taxes, there's a new sheriff in town, so to speak, in the way we calculate our taxes and the way we will calculate them next year for 2018. You know,
so this has been the big Trump agenda thing, right? They had to, this was their... if we don't get this passed, we won't have a huge legislative accomplishment. Trump and Republicans say this is going to be great for middle class Americans. You know, it simplifies the tax code, which is something that I'm in favor of simplifying the tax code. I don't know why it's not two pages,
right?
But instead, it's now 400.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you know, someone who studied tax law, you know, in law school, and I deal with it, you know, day to day in my profession, having to deal with the tax code and things like that. I mean, the tax code in and of itself is a ridiculous behemoth in terms of just the number of pages. Are we playing footsie, by the way?
No.
Oh, all right. Sorry. My foot just touched something on the
all right.
table.
All right.
Sorry.
Not that, that wasn't awkward at all.
It was. but the tax code is just, it's massive. And there are so many different, there's just so much to it that no one person is going to master, right? Like, you have a few kind of savants out there who can, you know, rattle off, you know, any number of sections of the tax code. But in reality, for, you know, the majority of people out there, there's so much that doesn't apply to them, or so much that could apply to them that they have no way of knowing. And even, I think, you know, I had an experience. I used an accountant just last year who I went to with specific questions, and she did a terrible job of answering them, right? She just did a terrible job across the board. I had already, you know, she came recommended, and I was completely unimpressed, disappointed, frustrated, annoyed, you know, got out of there. I paid her to do it because, you know, I'd already gone in and sat with her and gone through the whole thing, but just was completely turned off by her lack of knowledge and insight on what I was asking her. And I think that, you know, there are a lot of people who are done a disservice because their tax professional isn't as well-versed as they should be. And I don't know if I necessarily blame the tax professional, because there's so much to know and there's so many different
and
various...
And it's always changing, right?
Right, it's constantly changing. There's so many different aspects that could apply to any one person that, you know, I could see how it could get away from you. You know, now they're saying that with the passage of the new tax plan that it's been simplified, and that's technically correct.
Okay, yeah. So that'd
you know,
be true.
I mean, it's a little bit. It is a little bit more. You know, they've you know, increased the standard deduction. They've basically doubled it to $12,000 for individuals, and what that means is, you know, the need for some people to itemize will be greatly reduced, right? Because before it was $6,000, and just the average Midwestern person, you know, who owned a home, you know, they would have to run it both ways, right? Like, does it make sense for me to itemize? Where, because if I itemize, then, you know, I may be able to deduct, you know, $7,000, right? As opposed to the, you know, $6,500 that it was before. Or, you know, do I need to just go with the standard deduction because it ends up, you know, like
right.
really had to do a balancing act. Now they basically doubled it. And for the average person, especially, and I'm using the Midwest because that's where we are, But you know, the average person in like a Cleveland or a Detroit or you know where what right. have you, depending on their the value of their home, chances are it's going to make more sense for them just to take the $12,000 deduction. Now, once you bring in businesses and if you have the S corp and all that stuff, that doesn't get any simpler for you. You know, I mean, you still are going to need to work with a tax professional and work through the different steps and probably run your taxes a couple different ways to figure out how this applies to you. And I don't, you know, I don't profess to be a tax professional by any stretch of the imagination. You know, so please seek out a qualified, you know, CPA to help you with your taxes.
I've got the best accountant ever. It's a guy who retired as an accountant about 10 years ago, and now he does taxes dirt cheap. He's a former coworker of mine's dad. And I just send him my stuff, send him a check for $70, which is more than he asks for. I tip him roughly 100%.
Nice.
And he does my taxes and then uses that money to play golf when the weather gets better.
Hmm.
So that's... I hope that guy, I'm not even going to say his first name for fear that people might find him. And
right, and then bog him down and then all of a sudden you'll be paying double.
Right, and all of a sudden, I don't care, I'll pay.
Well, right, I mean,
dude, a good accountant, so good.
I mean, here's the thing, and we'll get off the tax thing, but you know, a good accountant that knows your situation and they know how to look for answers that will help you is really almost invaluable.
Right.
You know, having a person who understands your situation and can say this is the best way to kind of maximize, you know, reduce the amount of money that you're being taxed, because that's really what it comes down to, right?
Right.
You know, a lot of people are worried about tax returns and how much money they get back, and it all starts with, you know, reducing that taxable number. Right, because once you can pull that number down, right, and then you have the money that you've already paid out, then that's where you know you see tax returns. That's where you see getting money back or paying no money or paying you know the least amount as possible at the end of the year, as opposed to you know you sit there, you have your taxes done, and then it's just like, all right, you owe $3,500 or you owe $9,000 or $15,000 or whatever it may be, you know, and you know, I've had some, you know, ridiculous tax bills out there. And, you know, part of that is on me and part of that is on the professional who was supposed to be helping me with that.
I had a local accountant for 1 year. The son of a bitch pushed my taxes back. I met with him just to say, okay, I'm on my own in business for the first time in my life. I'm very concerned. You know, should I do this? Should I do this? He basically told me, don't worry about it. Pretty much all works out the same at the end. Then he told me I should have zeroed out my business account at the end of the year. I'm like, when I came here in August and asked you that fucking question, why wasn't there an answer? And then he pushed my return back until the 15th of April and said, yeah, you might end up, you know, you're gonna get about $5,000 back. So some of my other clients are gonna pay a lot. Then he calls me at like 5 p.m. on April 15th and said, yeah, you better come in, you owe about $5,000. I was like, I literally was this close to buying a boat. And I had looked at a boat like 2 days earlier that would have been worth roughly $5,000. I'm like, oh, you spent my tax return on a boat. Thank God I didn't buy that fucking boat, because it wasn't $5,000 coming in. It was going the other way. Wow. I was not happy.
That's just, you know, and owing taxes is, I mean, the other part of it is, let's say you don't have the money up front to pay it. You can work out a payment plan with the IRS, but mind you, they will charge you interest on what you owe. You know, I mean, like,
and so, there's no due process with the IRS.
No, there's not. I mean, you can, if you're lucky, you get someone that will work with you. But chances are you won't be lucky, and you'll get someone who is just going to be very superficial and say, this is what it says, this is what you owe, how much can you pay, good, boom, all right, now you're stuck in a payment plan for 2 years, 3 years, however long, and the whole time you're being charged interest for it, and it's just like, whoa, what the fuck just happened here? So,
it's easy to see why some people start hating the government around tax time.
It is easy, and so that's why you need to work with someone who knows what they're doing, who can help you and prepare you and minimize your exposure to having to pay these crazy tax amounts. And if there's no way around it, at least preparing you for it so you have some way to kind of cushion the blow when that time comes. So it's important to do something besides going to just H&R Block or just using TurboTax. You know, finding someone that actually knows what they're talking about is important.
And maybe fewer people will need to do that with a tax code that like takes itemization out. But so politically speaking, this has been the Republican Party narrowly passed this with no Democratic support. A lot of the Democrats said they didn't want to vote for a bill that they didn't see until it was ready to be voted for, which I can understand. I mean, here's 400 pages.
Yeah, and the problem with that is that, you know, the Affordable Care Act was passed the same exact
very
way.
Very similar.
Right. I mean, and
that
I'm not
came
saying
back to burn the Democrats.
Right. And I'm not saying that the way the ACA was passed was right, and I'm not saying that this is right, but you know, for Democrats to complain about it now, I mean, the implications are similar. You know, you're talking about a law that dictates how health insurance works in this country. We're talking about a law that dictates how, you know, taxes and money is taken from people and how government is paid for. Those are two monumental issues, which are why they are so divisive, and which is also why we really need bipartisan support for anything like that. There needs to be compromise. Both sides need to go into this, submit something where they're both relatively unhappy, but both can say, all right, at least we got this in, right? It should not be one-sided, whether it's health insurance or tax reform. It shouldn't be one-sided. You know, government should be built on compromise, right? Impacting the greatest number of people in a positive way, you know, or having leading responsible government, having the least amount of negative impact on people. There just needs to be more compromise, and that's why both the ACA and the tax reform bill, which they're trying to use the tax reform bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act,
right,
which I'm deliberately not calling it by its nickname, because I think that's one of the biggest problems with the Affordable Care Act is what people called it. And there are people out there who are saying, wait, the Affordable Care Act, what's that? But if I called it its other name, then people, oh, I know what that is.
Obamacare is the worst thing ever. I mean, there were so many surveys were like, do you support the Affordable Care Act? Absolutely. How about Obamacare? Oh, no, it's terrible.
Right. There were even instances where people were read what the Affordable Care Act was, told it was called the Affordable Care Act. They said, oh, that's great. Right. And then they went through and they said, okay, well, this is Obamacare. Right, they were told it was Obamacare, and they were read what it wasn't. Oh, that's terrible! Get rid of it.
But
right?
I also saw people who said, you know, they thought Obama was so arrogant for putting his name on the bill. I'm like, he didn't.
Right. I mean, I think we've talked about that in the past.
So I'm sure we have.
I think that, you know, when you don't have bipartisan support for something like this, whoever gets it through, it will come back to bite you in the ass. And I'm reserving a lot of comment about. You know, the new tax law, because I haven't read it, and I need to see it. I need to really dig into it, and you know, I've talked about this before, but I need, you know, for multiple reasons, I want to see it and start to have an understanding of what's in it, personally and then professionally as well. And that's one of the more frustrating things about the way this act was put through, is I didn't have a chance to read it. Right,
right.
No one did, and that's, you know, and I get the whole idea that they were trying to push it through and all that stuff. And I don't really care about the Democrats crying about it, because, again, that's what you did with the Affordable Care Act, and what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Right, I don't necessarily go along with that, because just because someone does something shitty doesn't mean...
Well, yeah, but shitty, in politics it is. Another
thing is, if Democrats are going to get up there and say, this is the worst thing ever, then they need to also be able to answer the question, did you read it, right?
Right.
So that's what always, the gotcha is always, this is the best thing ever. Okay, did you read it? Well, no, I didn't read it all, but I'm sure it's great.
Right, and that's the thing. And I don't know, like, I can't sit here, people are telling me that, oh, people are going to die, and it's killing the middle class, and, you know, this is the absolute worst, and blah, blah, blah. I need to know that for myself. Or I need someone who's actually read it from beginning to end, who, you know, has a copy of it with tabs and pencil writing in it, and who can who can sit there and break it down to me, or I need to be able to do it myself to be able to say, listen, and I can't look at it now, I can't read the entire tax code and tell you every single person that it's going to impact, positive or negatively, and if it's going to, you know, rocket launch our economy into the stratosphere, or if it's going to drag us down. I can't do that.
Here's one thing about that. Trump has been bragging about how strong the economy is for the first year of his tenure, and he's not wrong. The economy, at least on a basis of stock market and unemployment, the economy is doing great, and it has been doing great for roughly 7 years. So if the economy is rolling along so great, I don't know why we need a massive overhaul on this?
Well, and that's a big question, right? I mean, because you would think then that you would save something like this for when the economy dips,
yeah.
Right? Because then this would be the catalyst to then boost the economy, right? Like, so we see the economy, and it's been going up. Would someone argue that it was, the growth rate has been, was stagnant under Obama, and there's some truth to that. It did grow, but it didn't. We're not seeing it grow at this rate. I think part of what you can attribute to Trump is that there was an obvious shift on Wall Street when Trump was elected. There were assumptions made in terms of what his agenda was going to be based off of what he said and based off of what we knew about Trump that immediately changed the way Wall Street thought about a number of things. And so we see that confidence index number kind of turn on the inauguration. And a lot of that had to do with Trump just being elected, but it was nothing that he did. It was none of his policies that caused that. That was just people saying, okay, based off of who he is and what we know about him in business, we're going to assume that things are going to go our way.
There'll be fewer regulations, and therefore we can.
Right. And Trump has consistent, like the one thing he has delivered on is fighting government regulation.
Yes.
Which, as
a real estate guy, I can understand why that would feel like, you're in real estate, you deal with government.
I do. I do. And now, the way I work in real estate, like nothing he's done to this point has helped. And I could argue that, what he and Ben Carson are doing over at HUD is hurting just because there's no consistency there whatsoever now. There's no real direction that it's caused a problem. But regulations, over-regulation is definitely an issue to a concern. But at the same time, there's a balance. And there's a definite concern.
Left unregulated, lots of businesses will do very bad things,
and especially
for them in the short run.
And especially when you get into banks and brokerage firms and things like that, like there's legitimate concern about what. Like, listen, we're only 1 year in.
Right.
We're only 1 year in, and we already see Trump, dismantling organizations and government agencies that were supposed to check the banks, check mortgage brokers, check. All the different entities that deal with money, that deal with the consumer, we're starting to see those get eroded and get kind of torn apart. And so we're only into year one. It's going to take some time for everything to get dismantled and then for these companies to really kick it into overdrive to do what they really want to do. And we don't know what that is yet. It's too early to really tell what the actual impact is. But it's something that we need to be aware of, what I don't want to do is say it's going to be all bad because it may not be bad.
We don't know,
and it all depends on.
We won't know until probably April of next year. Or at least I won't know until April next year.
Right. I mean, it'll probably be longer than that. And in truth, it's going to have a different impact on different people. The impact to me and you is going to be different than, the kid just out of college making $30,000, $40,000 a year. But the impact to us compared to, someone who owns a $500,000 home who makes, $250,000 a year is going to be different compared to us. Like it's relative to your situation. And I think you and I need to just kind of monitor it and hope that we can articulate it in a general way that everybody can draw from.
Yeah. My guess is we could probably talk about this for about 3 hours and then have our audience want
We're
to
not
punch
doing
us
that.
In the face.
We're
so yeah, let's talk. It is a Christmas season. It's the time
here
for giving.
Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down. Okay.
I was going to say, I'm not going to stop you. I'm going to let you see how long you want to take that.
That wouldn't be long. I know no words to any Christmas song. singing them with my daughter, I go.
I got a few gifts. Family gift exchange. Everything was great, but I didn't get. My favorite gift of the holiday season was given to Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, who received a box full of horseshit. Somebody, and actually ended up going to his neighbor's house. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but somebody filled a box of horseshit and mailed it to Steve Mnuchin. And Secret Service, I think, got brought into it, and they did the whole "is this a bomb" thing. And I think the guy who did it stepped forward and said, "I did it."
Yeah, he did. I didn't read the story. I didn't realize. I think this is all kind of unfolded, yesterday and today. I didn't look into the guy who did it. I don't know his name.
I don't either.
It's funny. It's stupid.
It's definitely stupid.
But stupid
can be funny.
It is funny. I mean, I'm just, you know, if you don't know Steve Mnuchin.
He's the guy who he and his wife ran up ridiculous bills jet-setting around the country, you know, and she's snarkily talking about, you know.
She dresses in very, very high, you know, expensive designer clothes, and she was just, someone just took a picture of her holding a pallet of new, freshly printed new $100 bills, and she's been known to wear, like, some, you know, like, dresses that cost $5,000 and just, you know, Chanel and Gucci and all that sort of shit. I don't know
how. And she tweets about how basically she is above the little people.
Right.
She's, like, a pretty obnoxious person.
Right. Like, you know, my shoes are worth more than your entire life type person. So someone sent him a box wrapped in Christmas paper filled with horse shit. And I think that was in reference to the new tax bill.
Correct.
With him being the Treasury Secretary, they figured he was the most appropriate to send that to. It was, you know, it's definitely funny. Now, what's interesting is, you know, this guy came forward. No one knew who it was. I think, you know, there's going to be some risk involved with that. Now, you know, I don't know what he does. I don't know if he has a job. But there's a chance, like, you could see him get fired. There was a woman who was riding a bike, and she notoriously gave, she was going past the president's caravan or, his motorcade. And, you know, shortly after he was, you know, elected or inaugurated, and she gave the middle finger. And then it got out to who she was and the company she worked for. They fired her. And I think because they had a government contract with the U.S. And so, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, that's outrageous. And, you know, I think that when you do something like this, and with her, I felt a little bad. You know, it was just a, you know, spur of the moment type thing. She's riding the bike and she's frustrated and, you know, disappointed.
But free speech, Steve.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. It's not free. You know, I mean, it's
not a free speech issue.
Right. It's really not. And you got to be careful when you do stuff like this. And you know, it becomes something that's recognized in the media.
It draws attention to your company that you don't want.
It draws attention to you, and you decide, well, I'm going to step forward. You need to really think about the consequences here. You know, I mean, you have to think about, you know, like, well, now you are affiliated with us, and because you did that, like, your company has every right to fire you, and you don't really have, you know, recourse. Like, I mean, if they fire you, it's not a free speech issue unless you work for a government agency.
If they arrest you, if you get arrested for that, would be a violation of the First Amendment. You can't get arrested for giving the finger to somebody.
Right.
However, you can get fired.
Right. You can get fired, even though even if your job had a contract with the government, you know, they're still not a government agency or entity, and you can still be fired. So you just have to be careful. You know, and if you're going to do something like this, it's best to just stay anonymous.
It's way funnier if you're. We gotta find out who this guy is. Maybe even try to find him on Twitter and see if he'll come on talk with us.
We don't need to talk. To
oh, we
this
do.
Guy.
I want to talk to him.
What inspired you to put a pile of shit into a box?
That is legitimate. People want to know, Steve.
I mean, come on. Like, just, I mean, me and you sitting around, you know, having a couple one too many whiskeys and a cigar, have thought about doing some pretty stupid shit. And we have opted not to do it because it was just that stupid shit.
We sobered up and we realized, okay, that was a bad idea.
Right. I mean, I think that some of this stuff is good in theory, and then once you do it, you know, and then the other thing is, what is that notoriety worth? You know, at the end of the day, what's it worth? I mean, you lose your job, and then you can't, you know, springboard it into anything else.
You can't afford the horse shit to send them next year.
Right. You know.
All right. anyway, but the important thing here is it's funny. And then I guess one other hard news item that's kind of, you know,
we didn't order this show very well, but
no, we did not.
You know, it's in between the holidays, so I'm assuming listenership is going to be down. So I'm assuming you people won't hold us too much against
us. Oh, come on. It's not that bad.
No, it's not bad. ISIS.
Yes.
Terrorists.
Yes.
Bad.
Yes.
There's less of them.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that you would give the military credit for in the last year, so under the Trump administration, is They ISIS, whether it's due to greater U.S. involvement or, you know, other logistical reasons or whatever, ISIS as an entity in Syria and Iraq seems to be almost a dead entity. Yeah. I mean, they're down to a couple thousand people still staying by.
The last number that I saw was about 1,400 people, you know, active members that, you know, now you have to take this with a little bit of a grain of salt because they've, you know, there were, you have your active members that we know of, and then there's your you know, your sleeper cells and your groups of people who, you know, maybe aren't on the ground in Syria, but who knows where they've dispersed to, and what they're planning. But in terms of active fighters on the ground, you know, the number went from 10,000 and they're down to 1,000. Now, what I can tell you is that, you know, friends of mine that, that are in the military that I went to West Point with, or, you know, that I've met through, you know, different encounters and relationships that are active in the military have said, listen, whether you're with or whether you're for or against Trump, you know, from a military standpoint, things on the ground in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan changed, you know, that month that he got inaugurated. You know, a month after he got inaugurated, things just changed. And their rules of engagement, while they didn't formally change, like the directives and the orders changed, allowing them essentially to do their job. And there are a lot of people in the military, a lot of different branches, who felt restrained by the Obama administration, that they weren't able to do their job, that they weren't able to go in and, you know, secure certain locations and actually fight back. They were being reactionary instead of proactive, and they felt that by not being more aggressive, they weren't able to, you know, kind of
be as effective as they
should. Yeah, exactly. They just didn't have the ability to have the effect that they, that I think a lot of people were calling for. And, you know, we've been very vocal on this show, and I you know, there's some people who are going to disagree with us, and, you know, they'll go into the whole war machine and never-ending war, and, you know, and okay, fine. But the problem is that we're there. And so if we're not going to pull completely out, and by completely out, I mean pull every single soldier, every single weapon, every single tank, plane, boat, everything, pull completely out, and just everybody, you know, hold up shop here in the United States to really only protect our borders, and then, like, we can't do it half-assed. We can't just be there and sit there and have nothing happen. So either pull them all back, and I'm not necessarily opposed to that. You know, but we'll see what happens.
But you're right. It's
you can't just in or you can't out. Split it. You can't split it. And if you want to tell me that you want to be completely out, I'll listen to that all day. And if that's what a president wants to do eventually, then fine. I will support it. But if we have guys just sitting there, right? If you're going to send my friends over there to sit there and be sitting ducks and targets, that doesn't make any sense.
This is a you're in or you're not type of world.
And so it seems as though that has changed, and we're in, and we're being aggressive and pushing forward. Now, you know, again, there are going to be people who complain about that, you know, wars on foreign soil and you know, wars against brown people and everything else.
I'm not saying that's not wrong.
You're not wrong. That's completely accurate. But I mean, we are where we are. So, you know, if we're not going to pull out, then we need to go. We need to do what we're there to do, and then, you know, figure out the diplomatic solution, you know, afterwards. Now, people will also say that it's a never-ending cycle, and, you know, why are we in Africa right now? We're not fighting an active war there, and it's only a matter of time. And I agree, but the conversation isn't right now. You know, we're not. That's not the conversation right now. The fact of the matter is that we're there. There's a mission to do. We know that if we fight the terrorists back and we fight these different groups back, that it can help the people who are there. You know,
life on the ground in Syria and Iraq for the past.
I'm not there. I haven't been there.
I'm so glad I'm not there.
Right.
I mean, it's got to be a horrific existence. So anything that contributes towards stability, I'm for.
You know, I mean, and the other part of it, too, is if we're going to do anything about immigration, right? I mean, because the answer can't be, listen, Syria as a country sucks overall, so everybody from Syria spread to Western Europe and the United States and Canada, right? Like, that can't be the answer, right? I mean, we just can't sit there and accept that as the answer. I don't care how much of a bleeding heart liberal you are. So if we can do something to make the place where they're from not be terrible, then let's do that, right? I mean, because,
We talked about this in the past. Yeah. Absolutely. You cannot blame anyone fleeing Syria or many other places in the world, right? You know, Myanmar's a mess. There's so many parts of the world are a mess right now. And anyone who gets a chance to get the fuck out of there, I'm sure they would much rather have a stable country, a stable government, where they could, you know, live in their culture and you know, raise their families or whatever. But instead, they're in war zones, not of their doing.
Right.
And so,
I'm saying, listen, my thing is, if you're in a war-torn country where you can't trust your government, where your government is openly killing you and your family members, your friends, they're using weapons of mass destruction and gas and everything else on you, get the fuck out of there. Come over here. You know, we'll do what we can for you here and do our best to have some form of assimilation. And okay, great. But the reality is that's not a long-term solution. It is not.
Right.
And so and the solution is, all right, then if their government can't be trusted, then let's get them out of there. And hopefully at some point in time, we will figure out how to take down a corrupt, dangerous government and then get somebody in there who's not going to do the same thing 5-10 years later. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, like, everything we're doing makes sense except for our track record.
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Sucks.
Yeah?
Our track record with this fucking sucks.
I don't know how many attempts we've had at it, but we're oh and whatever.
Right. I mean, we are Hugh Jackson when it comes to, cleaning up these corrupt governments and putting in our own. And some people say it's on purpose and it's the CIA, you know, doing what they do and, you know, the DOJ wanting, you know, this endless cycle of war. And there's plenty of white papers and different things you could read out there that all support and go against that. Right. And I'm sure right now Mike Wood's head is about to explode because of his thought process on all of it. But at the same time, I think part of the solution is we can't just the idea of everybody who's in a war torn country come to America or Western Europe, that's not gonna continue to work. And so we have to figure out a way for people to not have to leave their country.
Right.
And it's not because I'm anti-whatever. It's because that would suck. I would not want to have to go, you know, to another continent to be safe. Right. I've never had to do that. I've never had to leave my home because I wasn't safe, more or less leave everything that I know and love. Right. I mean, like, there's got to be a way that we can help prevent that.
Yeah. And we certainly haven't figured it out yet because frankly, human greed gets in the way on almost every angle, whether it's on our side or, you know, you put someone in power. The only successful transition from oppression to peace that I can think of, and I don't even know how effective you would call it, would be South Africa.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that there's plenty of, we have some people that follow us on Twitter from South Africa, and you go and you look at their tweets and timelines, there's definitely still issues there.
Sure.
But it's not nearly as bad as, let's say, in Iraq or in Afghanistan or
Syria, right. Myanmar, most of Central America. All right, this is getting depressing. It's the holiday season, and I'm getting depressed again. All right. So I spent the holidays in Buffalo. I went to a bar to watch the Bills game.
I can't think of a good song that has anything.
It's good. Buffalo. I'm glad you can't.
I was trying, but
thank
I
you. Thank you for nothing. Yeah. Good.
There are. Am
a
I
few,
missing
there,
one?
There are a few out there, but I'm not handing you that ammunition. If I had my way, I'd shuffle off to Buffalo. Mm-mm. Nope. Okay. Good.
I said good songs.
You said good songs. I'm sorry. Johnny Cash. I've been everywhere, but there's a lot of other places you have to fit in there. Anyway, I'm in Buffalo. I'm in a sports bar watching the Bills and Patriots, and it went as predicted. But a couple weeks ago, your Steelers played the Patriots and got a touchdown that would have been the likely game-winning touchdown overturned in the final minute. I was not watching that game. I woke up the next day and saw it getting talked about and thought, I am so glad I was not watching that game with you because I'm guessing you would have lost your fucking mind.
Oh, and I did.
I'm not surprised. I would have. I was about to lose my mind, and it's a game I didn't even – I mean, anytime New England loses, I'm happy, so I won't say I didn't have a dog in the fight. But
it was
ridiculous.
It was just me and my dog, me and Dora, watching this game intently. And So my wave of emotions in this game, I mean, it was an ebb and flow, right? So first you have, like, the Steelers are up by, I think, 11 in the fourth quarter. And maybe it was 8. I can't remember. But the Steelers are up, and they – no, the Steelers were up – no, the Steelers were up 8. That's
okay.
Right. The Steelers are up 8. They stop the Patriots. Patriots kick a field goal. Steelers get the ball back, and then they punt. And then Tom Brady does what Tom Brady does. Steelers actually on this Patriot drive, their last drive, they have a chance to get an interception. Sean Davis drops it. Tom Brady just decides that he's going to throw to Rob Gronkowski and Rob Gronkowski only for the remainder of this drive, which that's the smart thing to do because
Rob Gronkowski is Frankenstein. Freak. Yeah.
I mean, you just can't stop him. He's 6'7", he's 260 pounds. Like, he's just a nightmare
and,
matchup.
And he's athletic as hell.
Right. I mean, he's extremely athletic.
He's dumb as a fucking rock, but okay.
Okay, fine. But his football IQ is high enough to where you can't stop him, right? I mean, he runs routes well. And I mean, he's got amazingly soft hands. So, Patriots go down, they score a touchdown, and I'm pissed. But I have faith, right? I got Ben Roethlisberger. I've been watching him all season, you know, lead these last-minute, two-minute drives down the field. So I have faith. And the Patriots' defense has been – the Steelers have been beating up on their defense, right? So, you know, second or third play from scrimmage, Roethlisberger throws to Juju Smith-Schuster. Schuster goes down the sideline, cuts the middle, gets tackled at, like, the 10-yard line. I go nuts. Dog jumps
they're
up.
They're down three at this point,
Steelers
right?
are down three. Right, I mean, so they were up 8.
Yeah,
Patriots go down, score a touchdown, get the 2-point conversion. Or no, first the Patriots kick a field goal, then they go down, score a touchdown, 2-point conversion.
Okay,
so the Steelers are down 3. Juju gets to the 10-yard line, right, going into the Patriots. So the Steelers need 10 yards to get a touchdown,
Or a field goal to tie,
Right, like you're down 3, and there's approximately 58 seconds left. Steelers run a play, and then they run another play on second down. Ben Roethlisberger throws to Jesse James. Jesse James gets the ball. He catches it. His knee goes down at the 1. He hasn't been touched, which means he's not down. He takes the ball, extends it over the goal line, right?
Which
any other time, that's a touchdown, right?
He extends it over the goal line,
and he breaks the plane. Clearly breaks the plane. There's no doubt about it. And he goes down. He lands. The ball shifts a little bit in his hand, but his right hand is still underneath the ball. But it shifts in his hand, and it's a touchdown. He stands up, and he lets out the beast mode scream, and everybody's excited. It's a touchdown. And then for some reason, you know, it's going. And then, you know, Tony Romo is talking out of his ass, and Jim Nance is kind of looking at him like, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, like, I'm wrestling with the dog, and it's all good and great. And then all of a sudden I realize, I'm like, wait a minute. And I look at the replay and I see the ball move and I said, wait, they're looking at that. And sure enough, those fucking refs come out and they say, no catch. Right?
Right.
So now it's third down. Steelers go, they throw a little pass, whatever. Ben Roethlisberger goes to Sean Kizer, throws an interception, game over, Patriots win. Right? And I'm sick to my stomach. Right, because everything about that catch that Jesse James made, he catches the ball, two hands on the ball, then his knee goes down, then he extends the ball out, which that's the football move, right? Because you need to make a football move. So he goes down, he extends it out over the goal line, crosses the plane. In any other play, right, in any other instance, if you once the ball crosses the plane.
The tip of the ball breaks the plane,
it's a touchdown. Right, if you knock the ball out of someone's hand after they break the plane.
Doesn't matter,
it's a touchdown. Right, if I'm running. Right, and I get tackled, and I put my arm out, and the ball crosses the plane, and after I cross the plane, I let go of the ball, it's still a touchdown.
As long as you cross the plane first.
As long as I cross the
plane. Don't do it to Sean Jackson.
Right, nothing else matters as long as the ball crosses the plane. But in this instance, they're saying the rule. Now, by letter of the law and by rule, their determination was arguably correct.
Right? Fine.
And my argument is the fact that his right hand was still under the ball. I don't see how you can say that is undisputable evidence that he didn't maintain control.
So that's the key. And here's where – so and I won't go into quite the same detail with the Bills, but basically they had end of the first half, Charles Clay catches the ball, reaches over. They said he dropped it. They did not review it. Next play, Kelvin Benjamin makes a catch in the corner, ruled a touchdown. They do the micro analysis, and you can literally see the little rubber pellets dragging from his second foot, ruled a touchdown on the field. The micro analysis says got 2 feet in. And then the question was, well, did he secure the ball in his arms? And here's where this goes haywire to me. The ruling used to, the way they used to do the replay was, if there is indisputable video evidence of an incorrect call, you overturn it. If not, the play stands as called on the field. Now it's coming to, we're going to have the, FBI, and not the FBI has been in the news so much, I don't want to sound like I'm trashing the FBI, but we're going to send the FBI in to, fully investigate and find out if there's any possible way this could have been ruled another way, and if there's any possible shred of doubt, we will reverse what the referee saw on the field. It didn't cost the Bills a game because they ended up losing by 3 touchdowns, but it did impact the flow of the game, and more importantly, it went to the Patriots again. It's just, to me, it is ruining the sport of football. It is making the games so frustrating to watch. I'm not saying it's biased towards the Patriots, but it's looking that way.
This is the dramatic Italian in you. So
dun, dun, dun. Yes, okay,
so,
whatever.
So I have to relax. It's not ruining.
You were just a picture of calm a minute ago.
It's
by the way,
not ruining the game of. But it's
you
frustrating.
See what I'm saying? It's frustrating.
I will.
It's hurting the product. Ruining might be too strong. It's hurt. It's making the.
You
game.
You know why I disagree?
Why do you disagree? Because I'm still watching.
No. Well, yes, you're still watching. And what are we talking about?
Go on.
And you're going to watch on Sunday. I'm going to watch on Sunday intently for a whole slew of reasons, as is, as a majority of the fans. So I won't say it's necessarily hurting the product. But what I will say is that it's a frustrating aspect. And football, in the NFL particularly, they could do themselves, like, this is where I get frustrated with the NFL. Their ego, right? Just the ego of the NFL. Their inability to say, you know what, we're wrong, right? Just right off the bat, just say, you know what, let's fix this.
Right.
You know, how long, I mean, for years, it took them 5 years to figure out the whole thing with the touchdown celebrations, right? Just let the guys fucking celebrate. It's not that big of a deal. Let the guys have fun, right? It took them 5 years and, however long, and everything was a penalty and a fine, and, how long did we have to call it the no fun league? Now, some of the celebrations are too dramatic and too much, but who the fuck cares? It doesn't matter, right? And if you're the guy who says, oh, well, they should just hand the ball to the ref and go back, get the fuck out of here. Chances are you never played, or if you did, the last time you played was in eighth grade. Shut up. Right,
and just spike the ball and
right.
Do the dance.
Yeah, and I mean, the celebrations aside, the NFL's ego is the NFL's problem, right? The fact that the NFL can't look at a problem and say, you know what, we're getting a lot of backlash, we're getting a lot of criticism here. There's nothing fundamental, and there's no fundamental reason why we can't fix this now. Right. But instead, they say, this has been a problem for the last, I would say this has been a problem for the last 5 years, right? Because that Calvin Johnson catch was 5 years ago, right?
Somewhere around there.
Years ago, because he's been retired for 2 years now. And that catch was maybe 2 years. So 4 years. But I mean, this started with Calvin Johnson, and then you had Dez Bryant in the playoffs against the Packers, where, I mean, that seemed like a pretty good catch to me, and then they said it was an incomplete catch, and then what was
determined a game
and determined a playoff game, mind
right.
you.
Oh, right.
With Dez Bryant. So, and this isn't the first time with the Patriots something like this, with the catches happen. And I mean, this is two times almost
in
2 weeks
month.
In a row.
Yeah, three weeks apart. Yeah.
It's 2 weeks apart.
You're right.
And this is where the NFL needs to come in and say, we need to address this, right? I mean, because you can make the argument that, any publicity is good publicity, and look, we're still talking about it. Okay, yes, no, maybe. Because my argument is, if you just make the right call, right? In my instance with the Steelers and Jesse James, it's called a touchdown on the field. You review it, and you say, there's not enough evidence for us to overturn it, but it was worth reviewing. You're still going to have the conversation. But I think a hell of a lot more people feel comfortable with you making the right call and saying, listen, that's a touchdown. I could see where you question it, but you know, like basically with his hand still being underneath the ball and the ball moving a little bit, I'm willing to say that that's right. a touchdown. And it crossed the plane and everything else, right? In your instance, if they go with, you know, we saw him drag the toe, you know, it was called a touchdown on the field. There's not enough for me to say, there's not inconclusive evidence. Right. There's not conclusive evidence that this is clearly not a touchdown. Right? Then you say, all right,
defer
that's a
to the guy on the field that you pay that money to make
exactly.
that call.
I mean, you're paying these refs $100,000 a year or whatever to do this job, then do it. Let them do it. You know what I mean? Like,
I think in our old show we talked about refs. I want to say refs make like almost $200,000 a year.
Something like that.
Because we talked about it.
Well, because this is, and actually we did talk about it, and we actually looked it up. I thought they made less. You said they made more. I think it's like 175 or something like that.
Somewhere
around
there.
Which it's good money if you can make it. Shit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's part time work, and I mean, I'll take that part time job any day of the week. But actually, there's no other point than that. I mean, they make $175,000 a year. Fuck.
What was my follow up point? None. That's
right.
A lot of money.
Nothing. I mean, they make plenty of money to do it. So.
And you're, I mean, frustrating mistakes are bad. But when you, this is why I'm saying it's bad for the product. When you sit there and microanalyze and turn
what I'll
to
tell you,
that,
you know what's fucked it up? The fact that they, because what they've done is they've taken it out of the guy, the referee on the field. They've taken it out of his hands.
Right.
And it goes to New York.
Some mysterious guy in New York.
Right, like, you know, some sketchy guy in a black hat and a black coat in New York.
I believe it's a Patriots hat and a black coat.
Right. I mean, it's, some guy in New York who, you know, is from Boston originally. Who grew up in Foxborough, is now the head referee who looks at everything and looks at all the video replay and makes a determination. And I think that's also part of the problem, because now that guy has to then prove his value, right? So he
right,
can just sit
right.
there yep. and agree with the guys on the field all the time, where the guys on the field are sitting there and saying, listen, I made the call on the field, and I'm looking at this video in super slow-mo. I saw it real time. I'm not going to overturn it. Right. There's
and
nothing
the,
here
the,
that
in
I'm
the case
seeing.
Of the two things we're talking about here, though, to me, the video evidence didn't just suggest that maybe the call wasn't right. They suggested that the call was right. And the Kelvin Benjamin thing, they showed evidence to support the referee's call, and yet it still got overturned. And the Jesse James thing, like you said, his hand is under the ball. It still got overturned. So it's almost like this invisible guy in New York wants to go na 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 na, and it's fucking ridiculous. I ended up in the bar I was in Buffalo, I ended up in a bit of a trash-talking moment because there was a guy who showed up there in a Patriots hat running his mouth because Boston people do that, and I had a field day with that guy. He shows up wearing his Patriots hat, just yelling out, go Patriots, and I was, you know, sat down. He sat down next to me, and I said, so are you from Boston? Because I was expecting him just to be some jumped on the winning team's bandwagon guy. And he said, no, I'm from Providence. I said, oh, so you like wanted to live in Boston, but it wasn't quite corrupt enough for you. So that let him know, I know where you're from, asshole. let's play. And then, thank you very much. And then I looked at the bartender later on when he couldn't shut the fuck up and said, hey, you know what they call a classy Patriots fan? Yeah, either does anybody else. So I had a good time.
Listen, I got to be careful because I, you know, obviously with me going to school out there, I have many, many close friends that are Patriots fans.
So do I.
They listen to the show.
So bring it.
And so
I owe one of them $100 in Ruth's Chris gift certificates. Fuck them all. I'm not a good loser.
I try to be as diplomatic as possible. Although I have to be honest. So that whole entire sequence, that pretty much the entire fourth quarter, diplomacy was out the window. I had a chain text going with two of my buddies that are diehard Patriots fans. And I had been a pretty good diplomat throughout the game. There was one thing, one little thing, but and then the fourth quarter comes, and I just lost all forms of diplomacy, right? Like I fuck you, fuck your team, fuck Tom Brady. Like who? Like I think I said something about Tom Brady's wife. It got ugly, and so then you know the Steelers come back. They get. I think my last text of sanity was Juju Smith-Schuster gets to the 10-yard line, and my last text was, I can't breathe, right? And because I literally couldn't. Like, I was screaming so loud, like, I couldn't breathe. I thought, like, I was like, oh, there's an Eric Garner joke in there somewhere.
Right, but
too soon.
Yeah.
And then, like, everything happened. So then I think I texted something along the lines of fuck you all, fuck the rest, screw, like it got really, really ugly. And
embrace the hate.
Yeah. I'm such a good diplomat. I'm good. I don't rub touchdowns in their faces, and I don't get sucked into their bullshit. And then all of a sudden it just came out.
Let your hate flow.
Yeah. Sith Lord got to me.
Yes. Well, the Steelers have no chance against the Patriots if they have a rematch. None.
Wait. What just happened?
If the Patriots and Steelers have a rematch in the playoffs, they have no chance.
Well, because explain yourself right now.
Because
this table's about to get fucking flipped.
Because the Patriots will know everything the Steelers organization is doing because they have James Harrison now.
Fuck what? You.
I'm joking.
you let me
walk you into that.
This is what happens. This is what not only football, not the NFL, but this particular match of the Patriots and the Steelers, like, it drives me fucking nuts. Because the Steelers for years have not been able to beat the Patriots. And this goes back prior to Tomlin. You know, a lot of Steeler fans want to, you know, give Tomlin a tough time, but like Bill Cowher couldn't beat Bill Belichick.
Most people don't beat Bill. I hate that son of a bitch, but he's fucking good. I mean,
who?
Belichick.
Oh yeah, listen, I'll tell you right now, Belichick and Brady. Belichick is going to go down to me as the greatest coach of all time, and Brady is going to go down as the greatest quarterback of all time. You can argue it left and right, but there's just no argument. It's just not. And there's no stat that you can throw at me. Because you don't have a stat. You're not going to be – it's not going to be stat-driven.
Well, he lost so many Super Bowls. Yeah, right. Okay.
But
five,
how many did he play six? In? He won five
and played in
seven.
Or eight.
No, because he only lost
two. They lost to the Giants twice, and they lost to somebody else?
Mm-mm.
Wow. All right.
I mean, the Patriots lost to Green Bay, but that was before Brady and Belichick. That was okay. Parcells and Drew Bledsoe. But the only two that they lost were to the Giants twice.
All right. Yeah. I mean, going down as great as
like
all
you
time.
You just don't have this. You're not going to come at me with stats. Joe Montana was great, and that's fine, but he's not Brady. Right. I mean, Brady's done it five times. The longevity, all of it. I mean, Belichick with free agency and everything else. Like, I mean, they're the best. Right. And I hate to say that because the Steelers, listen, we're not in the same division as the Patriots, but we play them almost every year. Right. And we've played them in the playoffs multiple times and we lose to them in the playoffs. Right. We've never beaten them in the playoffs. And actually that goes that year that Parcells and crew went, we lost to them in the playoffs, but we haven't beaten Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in the playoffs. We have only beat them in the regular season in the last 15 years. I think so since Brady and Belichick have been together in New England, we've only beat them, I think, twice that split between Cowher and Tomlin. So for me, it just the deep seated hate is just because we can't fucking beat him,
dude. You're talking to a Bills fan. I get it.
Right. I mean,
I think we've got four wins, but only one of them had Brady on the field.
Right. It's amazingly frustrating, and part of it too is a lot of it has to do with the Steelers and them not changing their game plan defensively. But besides all that, this whole thing with Harrison. I called it to begin with. Those same guys I was texting with about the game, they texted me and they said, oh, James Harrison's been released by the Steelers. What do you think? I'm like, well, he had been kind of a pain in the ass to the organization. And then they also had to make room for Marcus Gilbert, who was our starting tackle, who was suspended for PEDs.
I didn't know that was the reason for the move, but that makes perfect sense.
Needed a roster spot, and so they released him. But he wasn't showing up to meetings. He wasn't mentoring T.J. Watt or Bud Dupree. He was not involved in the game plan. This goes back to like week two or three of the season, and James Harrison is a guy who he wanted to play. And James Harrison is a guy who he's been
in the league for how long?
Listen, I mean, he's been in the league for, I think, like 14 years. He came from Kent State. He was, he was a free agent signing. He bounced around the league for 4 years. You know, he's with the Steelers, and then he was with the Ravens, and then he went back to the Steelers, and then he really came into his own. So he's the, like, he's got that Michael Jordan type mindset. Like, I have to, like, he's not a Michael Jordan type player.
He's got a chip on his shoulders at all times.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's got a chip on his shoulder all the time. So the reason why he's not helping a T.J. Watt and a Bud Dupree is because he's like, listen, I don't want to give up my spot. I'm not, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I want a chance to still play.
That's a tough balance, right?
And it is an amazingly tough balance, and not all guys handle it well. He didn't handle it well. You know, and a lot of the guys that the Steelers draft, because they draft, you know, a lot of times they find these diamond in the rough type guys. They find these guys with chips on their shoulder who have to fight and scrap for every single thing. Those guys, it's very hard for them to say, all right, now I'm going to sit back and be a mentor, because they feel that they have to, you know, earn every dollar, and they have to earn every rep, and they're just not going to give up to the guy who's there to take their job.
Yeah.
Right, Bud Dupree was drafted to take James Harrison's job. T.J. Watt was drafted to take James Harrison's job. So he's looking at it and saying, "Nope, everything I have, I'm going to keep." Now, there's a lot of people out there who are saying, "Well, oh, now he's going to the Patriots." Like, and this is coming from Steeler fans. He's going to give them all the keys to the kingdom and blow. Listen, folks, there is not a thing James Harrison can tell the Patriots that they don't already know. You've got a season, if not more, of game tape. They just played each other.
If the Patriots are still cheating like they've got caught doing before, they've been taping the Steelers.
Okay. Take your petty level down. Yeah. But, I mean, the bottom line is that they've got a season of game tape that the Patriots they can watch. And then they just played.
Got a head-to-head game.
Right, they just played, you know, 2 weeks ago. So they're going to rewatch that, and they're going to look at it and dissect it and break it down. The Steelers are going to change calls. They're going to change plays. They're going to change some things. So there's only so much that James Harrison can even provide them. So
It makes for good trash talk.
Right. I mean, from an intel standpoint, there's nothing that he's going to be able to give them that's going to be of any consequence on the field, right? Because chances are, like, and if he's on the field, okay, then he may be able to look at and see tendencies that he can use, and he may be able to translate to guys, but at the end of the
even
day,
then,
right? I mean, it's a month away, right? I mean, if it even happens, it's a month away, right? I mean, like, the Steelers are playing the Browns this week. The Patriots are playing the Jets. They both have a bye, and then they have to both play a game in the AFC divisional round before they get to the AFC championship. So there's a lot between now and then that's going to change, that he's only going to be able to provide so much. Like, the reason why James Harrison was brought into the Patriots, I initially said it was pass rush, but a buddy of mine, Coley Ihe, who was a teammate of mine at UMass, and he played in the NFL, he played for the Rams, he actually played for the Patriots for a short amount of time. He said they brought him in as a guy who can set the edge and help them stop the run game, right? Because James Harrison is my height and 250 pounds, and he's stout. At the very least, he can help set that edge, which will allow for their defense to help flow better, to stop whether it's Le'Veon Bell or the kid in Baltimore who's I can't think of his name. Or Cox. Whatever.
Right.
Or Collins. That's
Collins,
right. Alex Collins for Baltimore. But, like, whoever they end up playing in the next round, like, he's there to help set the edge, to help slow to help people, because people are running the ball against the Patriots, you know, pretty aggressively. He's not there to pass rush. You know, James Harrison played 40 snaps for the Steelers and only has one sack. So he's not there for his pass rush abilities. And listen, that doesn't even make sense. Every, you know, Gilbert and Villanueva, the two tackles for the Steelers, they practice against James Harrison every day. The reason why Villanueva is as good as he is because he practiced against James Harrison day in, day out. So you think that kid is going to fold in a big game? I mean, by the way, Villanueva is an Army Ranger, right? Like, if anybody's going to fold, I'm going to say it's probably not going to be that kid. You know, I mean, and listen, the Steelers have gone against James Harrison in the past. He played for the Cincinnati Bengals. He left us and went to the Cincinnati Bengals. We played against them before. We didn't fold. He had no sacks.
So this isn't the Steelers talk featuring Whiskey Congress.
Right. Sorry. I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, no, like, it's cool. I mean, but people are making a big deal about this. Right. Like, this is, you know,
I enjoyed watching your reaction on Facebook when you put like the four paragraph, like, here's why this is not a big deal. Please stop. And right. I'm sure it was based on a lot of, you know, shit you had to listen to on text.
Well, no, I mean, it's just, you know, like common sense. And then, you know, I loved it. You know, my buddy Coley, that's when he jumped in. You know, explained it from his perspective, which I didn't even think about that. I mean, just James Harrison is a stout, you know, edge-setting guy, which is, you know, really important because the Steelers killed the Patriots with, you know, Le'Veon Bell just, you know, off tackle a little bit further, just killing him, you know, getting 6-7 yards. Now, can James Harrison stop that? I don't know, because he can't run anymore, and he especially can't run with Le'Veon Bell. Not many people can.
This has been Steelers Talk featuring... All right, we should talk about college football real quick, because the before we get together again, the first two games of the college championship will have been played. So it's Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma. I know what I want to happen. I know what I think is going to happen. So do you want to go first? Do you want me to go?
Go ahead.
I think Clemson will beat Alabama. I think Georgia will roll all over Oklahoma. And I think Clemson will repeat as champions. Now, I don't really want that to happen. I would love to see Oklahoma win and Clemson win, so the SEC is out of the championship. And I've been critical of Baker Mayfield in the past, but I don't know. I'm kind of starting
critical
to
critical of him for why?
Just because I thought the thing he did, truthfully, because when he beat Ohio State, he spiked the flag in the middle of the O, and it pissed me off. And then anything he did for the rest of the year was going to piss me off. Okay. Yeah, fine. You got me to say it. I said it. Okay.
Okay. Now, here's my thing with Baker Mayfield. What he did at Ohio State, beating our ass, and the whole flag thing aside, I like the kid as a quarterback. He's not very tall. But he can throw in the pocket. He can throw outside the pocket. He can make all the throws, deep, short, middle range, everything else. I like the kid. I like his fire. You know, the whole thing with Kansas, a lot of people had an issue with what happened at Kansas where, you know, he grabbed his crotch and yelled, he kept, fuck you. Now, mind you, he did that directly because they didn't, he extended his hand at the coin toss at the beginning of the game to shake hands, and the Kansas players put their hands behind their back. Let me tell you this. If I am Baker Mayfield, I would have had the exact same reaction. I'm like, you're Kansas.
And you're not going to
shoot. You are 2-8, and you're not, okay. First, I'm going to hang 40 on you, and then I'm going to go fuck your girlfriend, right? And then I'm going to ask someone for a microphone and a camera so I can say that in front of the entire Kansas Jayhawk Nation. So I'm there with him on that. A lot of people will have, that's so distasteful. I don't give a fuck. I think what Kansas did was completely disrespectful. They got what they deserved. I like Mayfield. He's a scrappy guy. The comparisons to him and Johnny Manziel, I think, are completely unfounded. Baker Mayfield had one incident earlier, you know, last year where he was hammered and he, you know, got a drunk and disorderly conduct for running from the police. It happens. I'm willing to give him a pass because that's one incident, but the kid has a chip on his shoulder. He had to earn his way into the starting position at Oklahoma. It wasn't just handed to him, and he's shown me enough against quality talent in big games that he can ball. So I'll take Baker Mayfield. I'll take Oklahoma. I think that
you think they beat Georgia?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that they can beat Georgia.
I'd like to see it.
Because I don't know, like, Georgia can run the ball all day, but I don't know if Georgia can get into a shootout.
And the question is, can Oklahoma make it a shootout against a really good defense?
I think they can.
Okay.
And what do you think about, because, listen, Ohio State's defense is pretty good.
And they did march up and down that field.
Listen, Ohio State didn't play their best game, and they've got a lot of young guys, and it was early in the season. But, I mean, they did shred that defense, no problem.
I mean, I watched that game with you, and it was extremely frustrating. As an Ohio State fan.
Because we couldn't stop him.
Right.
Like, it's just like, but he's wide open, and he's running, and that's a touchdown.
All right, so you got Oklahoma beating Georgia. Who do you got, Alabama and Clemson?
I got Clemson beating Alabama.
And then?
Alabama has not looked. I've watched a fair number of Alabama games this year. One, I haven't seen them play anybody. The only team the best team I saw them play being Auburn, they looked bad against Auburn. And it's Nick Saban. I don't like Nick Saban as a person, as I've dealt with him. I was recruited by him at Michigan State, and he's a dick of a human being, but he's a damn good coach. That being said, I don't believe that he's got the firepower this year to really compete with the Clemson. So I think that Clemson Clemson wins this game. I'm willing to say that they win by a touchdown. And then you've got Clemson versus Oklahoma, and I think that gets a little bit harder.
I think we can save that. Let's back off on that championship prediction, because we'll be together again before that. So, okay. All right, man. You want to call it a show?
Call it, brother.
Enjoyed it a lot. Talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to Whiskey Congress. We're at Whiskey Congress on all the social media platforms. WhiskeyCongress.com. We're renovating the site.
Site's looking a little better. We've got the podcast up on the site, so you can go directly to our podcast from the site. Check us out. And there's more updates and renovations to come. Hopefully by the new year we have it all set up. And when it does, we'll make sure to let you know. And can we get a quick update on the chip challenge?
The chip challenge is a bit frustrating because my chip from the pickle bar has not arrived, or chips from the pickle bar have not arrived. So Pocky doesn't have any left. The pickle bar in Daytona Beach, Florida has not responded. I paid them for these things.
Hey, so if any of you out there have any sort of connections or access or whatever and want to help us out, please do. We'll be more than happy to help, get you promoted, engaged on the show and everything else. And so just, reach out to us. You can get Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com, Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com, Twitter, just at Whiskey Congress, Instagram, Facebook, all those, just Whiskey Congress, put us in there, check us out. But if you can help Jim with this chip challenge, that would be fantastic. Come on now,
don't,
people.
Don't act like you're my friend in this. You're looking to see me suffer. You know this. I know this.
Yeah. No shit.
Thank you for not denying. All right, man. Good talking to you. Let's get together soon. And Happy New Year, because that's roughly when you'll be hearing this.
Happy New Year.